This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting. Put them hands up. Yeah, put them hands up.
Make you feel good, right, Cats?
Better.
How are you feeling now, Ketch? I'm feeling a little bit better as a guy who is recovering from a little surgical procedure yesterday. I had a balloon sinuplasty. Did I tell you about this? Did I tell you I was getting this done?
Yes.
Yeah, so balloon sinuplasty, trying to get this whole sleep apnea thing under control. So
that's been a hell of an ordeal.
Well, it's been an ordeal for years, but I'll be honest with you. The people that I'm dealing with have been great. Like, I've been going to the sinus and snoring specialist here in Austin. Not a sponsor, but definitely worth shouting out. They, you know, when I went originally in Michigan to get this whole sleep study, everything done with my whole sleep apnea, they basically misdiagnosed me. Like, that's, they just basically did. And so, essentially, I'm unable to breathe through my nose because I had a deviated septum, which basically meant, like, I had a really, really narrow passageway. So, when they prescribed the CPAP for me over in Michigan, what that was doing was shooting air into a closed passageway in my nose. So, there's no way I could ever take to it when this thing, you know, is just up like a clogged, you know, vessel. So what they were able to do was, once they did their whole scan, was able to see, like, oh, yeah, you do have these passageways. So they're trying to give me steroids medicines for a month. That didn't work. So they were like, listen, you know, if we clean out that whole sinus thing that's all messed up with you, they clean it, they flush it, then you can then breathe through your nose. And then we can give you a mouthpiece to put in your mouth so then you can just breathe through your nose at night and you have a restful night of sleep. So I was and look, it's early. Like, I was breathing through my nose all yesterday. I was on all types of drugs. I mean, I was loopy. I mean, but I was able to sleep a little bit last night. Like, I felt pretty good. I'm not bleeding through my nose right now. So I feel like the procedure was the major thing, and I'm kind of on the tail end of that.
Well, good, man.
I feel good.
That's all that matters. Like, that's a lot. That's a, you know, misdiagnosed in years and shooting into closed spaces. I had sleep apnea 20 years ago, and it just, like, miraculously cleared itself up. I used to have, like, can I tell you a quick sleep funny story? I was in Miami once for one night at a Rivals event in 1999, 2000, one of those years. But I was by myself. And I was in Miami by myself, had to be up early the next day, just was kind of lame, didn't have any real nice I was in Miami, right? So it wasn't like I wasn't in a position to go big. So I went to a movie because it was right by the hotel that I was staying at, and I just figured I'm going to punt on the weekend. So I go see this movie called The General's Daughter with John Travolta. And I had a sleeping disorder, and it got dark, and I fell asleep in the movie theater. And apparently I was snoring so loudly that this guy came back from, like, four rows to tap me on the shoulder. He was like, yo, man, it's been going on for like 15 minutes. You have to stop snoring.
Oh, damn.
And I was like, oh. So then I watched the rest of the movie, but I was so, you don't recover from that, right? You're in a foreign city, you're sitting in a theater, and I was down kind of low. So it wasn't like I was up high. Like, people could definitely look down on me. And I was like the fat dude snoring in the movie theater, ruin everybody's. I got the hell out of Dodge as soon as I could. I haven't been back to Miami since. I got run out of town with some snoring.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing, man. When you have sleep apnea, like, and this is what people don't understand. Like, it, especially if you're the person who's dating that person with sleep apnea, the girlfriend, the wife, or something like that. Like, the person who has it takes no pride in what they're going through, right? They take no pride. First, they don't know. So there's a portion of they don't know because they're sleeping, right? But secondly, like, they don't understand, like, hey, this thing is takes a toll on the person's body. And there's really a thing. You know what really inspired me actually to kind of go and do this whole thing again? Is this the person who I am dating now, Black Ross? You know, I've alluded to things on the podcast without getting into things on the podcast. But what she said to me was, you know, you were sleeping one night and I saw you, like, and I felt bad for you. Like, you were trying to take a breath and I just wanted to breathe for you. I was like, and she's like, she's taking a dramatic breath. She's like, I was just so concerned. And she's like, I talked to my sister about it. And she's like, you know, I'm just concerned about your health and your long-term health. And, you know, this is not going to be good for you long-term. And, you know, you have kids and you're a father and you want to be around for them. And, you know, I just hope that you actually take some time to think about potentially getting this thing looked at again, you know? And that approach, Ketch, was so much more different than someone getting up and darting from the bedroom to the couch because they're mad at you. You know what I'm saying? Kicking you because they're mad at you. Getting fussed at because they're mad at you. Because now you're just defensive the whole time. You're like, all right. You know, you're just being, you know, really insensitive about it. But someone came and they were like, hey, your health. Like, you're knocking years off your life and you have young kids. This is important.
Man, once you hear that, you ain't got to hear nothing else. Like, that is, if you are it doesn't matter, guy, girl, and you're thinking about which bedside manner should I approach with anyone over the age of 30, 35. If they've got kids, play that angle, man, because the moment you have your first kid and you're over the age of 35, really, once you get, like, we start thinking about 40, but, man, it's right about that time when, like, dude, you know, tap out for varying reasons.
Yes.
And, like, the first time you know someone that you went to high school with that dies outside of a car accident, or, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
It's like, oh, Billy died. And it's like, oh, what happened to Billy? Oh, he just died in his sleep. You know,
yeah.
Or, oh, he got cancer, or he had an aneurysm, or, like, whatever. And so, yeah, I'm with you. If somebody came to me and said, man, I just was watching you sleep and I just want you to live, I would be in a sleep apnea place the next day. That's it.
I was making calls the next day, doing my investigation on Yelp, this and that. And 2 days later, I had made an appointment. Like, and something that just a simple approach of someone not treating you like you're the elephant man, or, you know, or that something is so just hideous about you, but someone,
you're right,
like,
the couch is the worst.
Oh, it is. It's so, like, the ultimate of making you feel like a piece of shit. Is,
you know,
when
what? When my wife snores, I tell her, I'm like, you know, and I try not to be like, I always tell her, like, it's not a big deal. Like, it either didn't keep me from sleeping or whatever, but, like, you know, I'll let her know. Like, I was worried you were snoring so loud. Like, you know, I think I take a tactful approach because my wife has stopped on the occasions when I do occasionally snore. She doesn't go to the couch, but she used to.
Yes.
And, you know, it makes you feel like you're a leper.
It does. There's nothing.
You're like, I'll go to the community. You feel like you should be shunned to the room where everybody just snores.
And again, it's not snoring because, you know, you just what you choose to do. It's snoring because your body is off. Like,
your body's grasping for air.
Yes.
And your significant other is like, screw this. I'm going to the couch.
Screw you. And you knew literally you losing your last breath. Like you're about to die. Like you cannot breathe. Like your body did not exhale for 3 to 4 seconds. All right. And now you're like,
I just turned the TV up louder. It's okay.
Who does this? So yes, I'm getting my sleep apnea thing taken care of. So that's a good thing. And then, Ketch, I'm about to say something that is going to be very monumental in the history of the Drunk Uncle podcast here.
Oh, I know what it is.
I alluded to it in the podcast last week. Someone actually private messaged me about it, saying like, "Hey, congratulations, Rocky Osborne. Do you ever see her on Twitter?" Ketch, she's a Longhorn fan, does some workouts, seems to be really, really nice person. So she's like, "Hey, congratulations on what's about to happen." But the Drunk Uncle has a sponsor, Ketch. It's from the Lowy Law Firm here in Austin, Texas. So let me read this to you. I actually get to read this. Adam Lowy is one of the top personal injury lawyers in Austin. Adam's a proud graduate of the University of Texas Law School and started his law firm in 2005. Adam helps people who have been injured in car crashes, slip and falls, dog bites, and other assorted ways. He is actively involved in every case he handles and is always available to talk to you through phone or text. If you or your loved one has been injured, call the Lowy Law Firm at 512-280-0800. That's 512-280-0800. Tell them Onward sent you.
You have to. Like, that's how they know it works.
Yeah. Tell them Onward sent you, or the Drunk Uncle. But yeah, you could say Onward sent you. Ketch, listen, we're 120 something episodes in of the Drunk Uncle. And you know, the one thing I've always put out on the podcast, man, sure, it'd be good to have a sponsor. It'd be nice to have a sponsor. One day we're going to have a sponsor. I'm like, we're going to have a sponsor. And this year I made some efforts to clean up the Drunk Uncle, kind of remove Pip Game 101, said I'll do it when necessary, but just kind of wanted to do something a little, you know, I would say a little more professional because I still want to be authentic.
You kind of pulled an ice cube.
I did pull an ice cube. I did pull a cue that said, all right, it's time to grow up, right? It's time to grow up. You alluded to before, when you talked about the difference between older and younger, like younger going down to a 6th Street or wherever place that you live that had like the entertainment districts and then risking it on the ride home, it just seemed like a normal Friday or Saturday. You get older and then you're like, taxi. Then you get really older, you're like, oh, damn, there's Uber. There's Lyft. Like, why am I doing this, right? And so it was time to grow up a little bit on the podcast. I have fun. It's there when I need it. But I'm very excited, Ketch. And one of the reasons I want to bring you in as one of the co-founders of the Yak Network, that I feel this is also a kind of a, I'll say monumental, but it is a pretty big thing when your podcast is able to get a sponsor.
Yes. And two things. One, it is good for the Yak. Like, I'm having a meeting with the Yak guys tomorrow, and we've had a little bit of a lull because of COVID for obvious reasons. The world's kind of slowed down, and it's hard to recruit when people are don't know when the next game is. But it did give me an idea for how we should navigate moving forward that I want to talk to the guys about. But my other suggestion is, and I don't know how this is how Anwar and I do podcasts. We don't plan anything really in advance. Anwar, I think Mr. Lowy deserves his own, like, he should get his own song. Like, you need to play the song again, but this one needs to be dedicated. Like, he should be able to know that the intro, if even for just like 15 seconds, get it going, get it moving, is dedicated to the new sponsor. We should dance to that.
Yes, we should. We definitely should. All right, let me fire it back up.
Fire it back up.
You know, yeah, just, again, unplanned, unscripted. It's just kind of what we do. I'm going to be fired back up, Ketch.
We ain't doing this all the time. You got a sponsor for the first time in 120 episodes.
I mean, that's pretty freaking major, man.
Play the theme song twice.
All right. man. What's the second, man? These things take time, can't
you? Well, I know. You probably closed the program down.
Oh, yeah. Closed out everything. Took speakers away. Like, all this other type of stuff. You're like, DJ, play this. I'm like, wait a second.
I know. I know.
This is not how it works. This is not how the music works. But
now you know how it feels when I'm on the receiving end. And it's like, here's my audio dump podcast.
This is for
Adam. Get the hands up. Drunk Uncle's got a title sponsor. Notice the Sunday Pulp.
All right. So we got Adam in. So Adam, the great thing about Adam is that you know, Adam's going to be around for a while. So that's the great thing about it. And I'm definitely looking forward to not only his sponsorship here on the podcast, but clearly the things that he's doing on Orange Bloods. You know, Adam's in the OB business, man. And I'm excited to have him.
Likewise.
Yeah. So shout out to Adam Lowy. You will get love. And I think, Adam, you're going to get a lot on a return. A lot more than you ever expected. He's very happy about everything going so far. And Adam, we will be shooting business your way. You just hold on and wait because, you know, hopefully just we got enough people who are listening. So, you know, your brand recognition is definitely going to grow through your Orange Bloods and Yak relationship. Okay. So, Ketch, again, unscripted. And this is true. Like, Ketch never knows what I'm hitting him with. Doesn't know what I'm thinking. Everything that he gets is always from an unscripted nature. And Ketch, the thing, let me give you the setup of where we're going today. With us being about, you know, almost we're at 2.5 weeks until the season opener, just about 2.5 weeks to the season opener. It's becoming more real that this thing is going to happen, right? I don't foresee, knock on wood, this thing being pulled out at the last minute. Now, we have to see what happens when students return to campus later this week. I believe classes start on Thursday, if I'm correct, Ketch. So we got to see what happens when the testing occurs and what is the reaction or overreaction. I mean, we saw a couple of things yesterday where I guess University of Alabama had about 500 cases. We didn't hear nothing about Alabama canceling football. We just heard that students had 500 cases. And so I still think no matter what happens, we're going to go into this thing with an expectation that UT students are going to come back. They're going to get tested. They're going to be positive cases. You're not going to get around that. But at the end of the day, these kids are, you know, football team is kind of isolating themselves. And so it seems like no matter what, when September 12th comes around, we're going to have football. And that leads me, Ketch, into where I feel like it's a really good football discussion because so many things have been going on, we really haven't talked a lot about the expectations of Tom Herman and this program heading into year 4. And we just had so many other things that distracted us. We didn't know we were going to have a football season. So what are we going to talk about and why would we talk about these things? But the one thing that you've been,
this could be like a 4-hour podcast. If this is,
that's okay because yes, you're right.
If this is the conversation, we could talk for days.
Yes, but I'm going to limit the conversation because I'm going to have it go in a certain direction.
Okay.
Because more specifically, you know, the thing that you've hammered home, you know, since I've been here, and I get it, which is this team has to win a Big 12 championship. Like ultimately, the University of Texas football team is measured by winning Big 12 championships. That's just what it is. Now, getting to the game is great, and it hasn't happened a lot. Clearly, since 2009, it's only happened one time. But when we start to talk about what Herman's here, what he's hired for, the main things are winning a Big 12 championship. So let's start there. So I'm going to give you a scale, and I know you like scales. And here's going to be your grading scale.
I do like scales.
You do like them. This is why I made this especially for you. I've got 10 questions, so don't.
I feel like there are people inside the athletic department that know that I like scales. I'm scale
probably.
Guy.
Probably you are a scale guy.
I'm 1 to 10 scale guy. Go ahead.
You Sorry. Are. So I'm gonna. It's gonna be more like 1 to 5.
Okay.
We're gonna go very important, fairly important, important, slightly important, or not at all.
Okay.
So
not at all being a one.
Yes, that's the one. Okay. You're very important is your five. So I'll read it once again.
I got
very,
you.
Very important, fairly important, important. So that's your middle ground right there. You know, you're slightly important and not at all. As relates to winning a, for Texas to win a Big 12 title, my first question to you, Sam Ehlinger being the best quarterback in every game, where is that on your scale?
Four.
Okay.
Isn't it?
Yes, that's fairly important.
It's not a five because they'll play games on the schedule. They don't need him to necessarily be the best player on the field. But, you know, when they beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl a couple of years ago, they did that. As well as that team played, Texas won that game. And Texas was the better team in that game decisively. But Texas won the game because Sam Ehlinger was the best player on the field. And, you know, I just think that in the biggest games of this season in the Big 12, and what's interesting is now they're just playing a Big 12 schedule for the most part, 90% Big 12 schedule, all the games that matter, definitely on the Big 12 schedule. That means they got to score the most points. That's what the Big 12 is. So, yeah, I'll put Sam at a four.
I'm with you. I'm gonna go the same way. You know, there may be a game where you optimistically think maybe the defense plays, you know, pretty well. There may be a game where he's not particularly on. But to your point, we've seen how important Sam is, and it's noticeable, right? We, you know, his defining moment, catch, what is his biggest game here at Texas was that OU game during the regular season 2 years ago.
Yep.
Against Kyler Murray, where at the end of the day, we talked about it. You and I talked about it at length. It was going to come down to the guy who blinked first, and Kyler blinked in that game. And when he put that ball down and fumbled, that's what it was. Now, Kyler came back in the fourth quarter, and it was a hell of a game, one of the more memorable games. But, you know, at the end of the day, Sam was able to lead that team down the field and set up a, you know, the game-winning field goal. When we know that that guy plays at an elite level, and we know, look, he went toe-to-toe with Joe Burrow, so much to the point that Ed Orgeron said we were hoping that Texas didn't get the ball again because we knew we couldn't stop him. So we know what the guy can do, but I'm switching as I talk myself into it. I'm going to go very important. I'm going to go to a five. Because,
can I just ask you a quick question?
Yes.
Because I feel like this is imperative, because as I was listening to you talk, I thought about the last Texas team to win a Big 12 championship. And they had Colt McCoy, but Colt McCoy, the year they won the Big 12 championship, very seldom was the best player on the field. So my question would be, how good is this Texas defense? Because if you tell me that they're not a top 50 defense, then my answer might be five. Right? But if you tell me that they've got a national top 20 defense, you can get away with a lot of sins when either your quarterback is really, really good or your defense is really, really good. If you can ever combine those two things together, you can be hell on wheels.
I think you, on this one, Ketch, I'm going to have to defer to you because you, I need you to project what you think this defense would be in order for you to project what you think Sam should do. Because, you know what I'm saying? Like, I know I can give you the parameters, but that would be, you know, you've got to project to me, like, okay, I think.
All right, four Chris and a half.
Okay, four and a half. Okay.
You know why? Because this defense is barely practiced, and a year ago they were trash and got the entire staff fired. So, I think one of the things that you and I constantly battle is, like, we're always sensitive to, we don't want to be homers, but forget about homers for a second. Sometimes you can just be too close to a program. Sometimes, because it's our beat, we're going to know Texas so inside and outside that we're going to over-scrutinize some things, or we're going to be, I don't know, sometimes you can be too, you can just give too much benefit of the doubt, even when you tell yourself you're not going to give benefit of the doubt. So I'm trying to be a good benefit of the doubter here by cutting myself off. You ever put my buddy, you know, Ross?
Yes.
He's been spending too much time on Nextdoor.
Oh, God. So
he put a thing on his phone that restricts the amount of time that he can spend on Nextdoor. And he's not communicating. He's just reading too much. Like, he's become obsessed with like all the weird things happening in Hyde Park.
Yeah.
So like the other day he wanted to tell me a story and like an alert popped up on his phone and it was like, you've been on next door for 15 minutes today. You're not allowed to go on. And that's what I feel like I'm doing. I'm just full transparency. This might be the time where maybe Ash deserves the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he's that good. But I feel like I've been given so much benefit of the doubt for so long that my self-awareness is stopping me. And I'm assuming that it would be a really big step forward even to get this group. If this group had been top 50 a year ago, they might have won 10 games.
Yes.
I mean, top 50 is a big step up from where it lived for so much of the season. I need to see them do it first. So I'll go 4.5. If I thought the defense was going to be an absolute just disaster, the answer would have to be 5.
Yes.
My questions about it make it a 4.5.
Okay. So you know your options were very important or fairly important. You've kind of gone somewhere in between. So I'm going to round up for you.
You wouldn't give me a 10-point scale.
Well, I mean, it's
going to be a 10. I'm going with what would be my 9.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to round up.
It's your game. So,
yeah, it's my game. You know, so I'm rounding up to make it easier for the transaction.
Nobody ever tells Alex Trebek the rules of Jeopardy.
Yes, that's fine. I will interpret your answer. Number two, Keontae Ingram or Bijan Robinson rushes for over 1,000 yards this season. How important on that scale is it for Texas to win a Big 12 title?
3.
Okay, so important,
but it's not a 10-game schedule. So, you know, the per game averages actually have to increase almost to 100 yards. I mean, if you played in a Big 12 championship game, you're getting 11 games. But in a normal season, you only have to average 75 yards a game, to not including a big. If you have 12 games, I think 75 is a number that you have to hit. If you're playing 10, you've got to rush for 100. That's a lot. So
you should get $150 against UTEP, though. You should get a good head start there, Ketch.
But who's getting the $150? Because I don't know who in that game is getting 15 carries. I mean, that may be a game where Keontae gets 12. You figure Bijan's going to get some at some point. He's going to get his dozen. Like, I can see them having – this is my thing with the running game. I could see them having two guys with 100 yards in that game. And maybe three guys with 70. And I think this may be a running game this season. Because they're, man, we don't live in a world where they're rushing to not play Rashawn Johnson.
Uh-huh.
We're not living in a world where they're rushing to not play Keontae Ingram. We do live in a world, though, where they want to get Bijan on the field.
Yes.
They've got three running backs. They all want to play them. This is a running backs coach that has liberally shuffled in his running backs in and out. He has, since he's been at Ohio State, been a guy that will rotate his backs. I think in a 10-game schedule, the way things are set up, I don't see a 1,000-yard back right now, but I could see one of these guys getting close, another guy being not too far away, like a couple of hundred, close enough that in a year where there are 12 games, they might get really close. And then I can even see the third guy getting 450, 500 yards. I think this could be a year where they've got three guys with over 500 yards each. And that may not sound like much, but Anwar, when you first got here, the running back was leading the team in rushing yardage, and they weren't breaking 500. So 500 apiece with one guy getting maybe 800, 900, that'd be a really good running game, not including Sam Ellinger.
It's a good point. You're very, very good points. What throws it off on the question, and again, unscripted, I did not factor in the 12 games versus the 10 games. And now that I factor that in, because I thought it was a good question, but I didn't realize I didn't think it through enough, I got to go with you as the important portion of it. But probably not very important or so. But, you know, you idealistically, now look, I get it. Like, Texas also had a 2,000-yard running back in Deontay Foreman. They lost five. They won five games and lost to Kansas, right? So, you know, so I do get that you can over-romanticize this thing just a little bit as relates to that. But I guess I'll just go on record of saying that I do want to see more from the run game. I do want to see more consistency from that run game. And I wanted to be a week in and week out type of deal where, you know, you could just punch your, you don't just know exactly what to expect out of everyone. You're like, all right, I got this, I got that. Like this, you can look at this guy and say, okay, he's going to give us 80 or so, or, you know, more. And so in any case, so that's why I'm going to put it on the important scale. All right. Number three, this is right up your alley.
More than five. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be. I think it's going to be a five.
Okay.
Brennan Eagles emerges as the number one receiver this season.
Four.
Okay.
It would be, I think, a develop. Tom Herman fired his entire staff for the most part, outside of a couple of guys, because of developmental issues. In April, Tom Herman was talking about Brennan Eagles in the same capacity as the best receivers he's ever had. When you had that sit down with Tom Herman, you didn't say, hey, this is Brennan Eagles is catches guy, and you'd be doing him a big solid if you just gushed on him for a little bit. And Tom was like, no problem. I'll help catch out. I'll gush about my, that didn't happen. You asked Tom Herman a question, and Tom Herman independently brought up Brennan Eagles in the context of Lil Jordan, Devin Duvernay, the best receivers that he's had. So when that happened, look, we made a big deal out of it. Like, whoa, that's a big vote of confidence. Brennan Eagles was a guy that was in the doghouse at times a year ago. There were times, as you've pointed out, I think repeatedly throughout the last year when we've had the Brennan Eagles discussion, there were games he was a non-factor. But when you look at the totality of his season, his numbers hold up really well historically. His talent is off the charts good. You combine those two things together with departures that they've had, and I don't blame Tom for talking about Brennan in this context because he looks like he should be an NFL first-day pick next year on paper. If a few months later that kid is running with the twos and is no longer emerging as a dominant all Big 12 type of player, you failed at your development. Now look, it can be Brennan Eagles' fault, but we're not suggesting that. You've proposed a question to me where the importance of Brennan Eagles is what for Texas doing this. I think from a big picture standpoint, from 30,000 feet up, Brennan Eagles, more than just he needs to be a receiver with a big year, to me, he's symbolic of where this program is. He's a really super talented dude who hasn't found the light switch. There's about 20 of those guys on this roster like that. Tom Herman turned over his staff because they weren't getting those guys to develop and find the light switch. Come hell or high water, the job of this offense and these offensive coaches and Brennan Eagles' position coach is to get the best out of him. And not doing so, not getting that guy to perform at a level that this spring they had him pegged for, I just think I think this team could win a Big 12 championship without Brennan Eagles, because Tariq Black could have a big season. Jake Smith could have a big season. They've got numbers, but he's supposed to be the guy. And if he just falls by the wayside and becomes just an okay player and they aren't able to get that first day, or he's more of a second day NFL talent. I was thinking of the first three rounds and not the first round being its own day, but Brennan Eagles at worst looks like a top three round physical talent. If you can't get that from him at some point, I'm not going to say it's a bit of a failure. And I think if we had Tom Herman privately and we had this conversation in April and you asked him this question, I think he would say, oh, now we have to get the most out of Brennan Eagles. And if we get to September, October, November, and that changes, I just think that's confirmation bias kicking in and they've changed their mental approach a little bit, but it won't have changed the fact that he's as important of a personnel project as I think exists in the entire roster.
I think you have a really – no.
That was a rant.
No. Well, it's not a rant. It's really accurate. You know, I base this conversation, you know, off of what I've reported recently, which is, you know, why Brendan Eagle seems to be running with the twos. And that is them, you know, working hard, you know, and trying to get the most out of him. And, you know, that's probably one of those things that you've talked about this catch. Like sometimes the biggest stars need to be pushed the most because they have so much talent. And so it's just a matter of like, how do you extract that? You know, so you get the coaches are working with him. Now, that being said, you probably idealistically don't want that to be the case, right? You want to feel like he's able to do it on his own. And it's a fact that they are having to use motivational techniques, I think, is a little bit of concern. I don't think it's a major concern because, you know, I'm sure when the push comes to shove and kickoffs happen, like, you know, he'll run out there with the first team. But to run out there and stay there, you know, are two different things. The one thing we know about this coaching staff, Ketch, is that if they feel like a guy's not producing on the field, they don't have too much beef or qualms about pulling a guy or taking him out. Like we saw that from a practice standpoint, Kobe Boyce did really well. But when he got out on the field and he struggled, you know, they pulled him. And that was the last that we heard of him. You know, we saw games where Keontae Ingram maybe was not at his best last year. And they had no problem running Roschon Johnson. I mean, in the LSU game, they were running Roschon Johnson. And they were go get us yards.
I feel you, but and I'll point to Bijan with this. There's just certain guys that you recruit. Like if you want to recruit big time, top national 50, 75 guys, when you get those guys, man, they got to pan out. And the one thing you don't want to do is have a guy like Brendan Eagles come in who's a borderline 5-star talent and not make it, and then have a couple of those, and then they get used against you as, you know, you won't get the next 5-star running back for a while if Bijan Robinson's not getting the kind of workload that the next 5-star – you know, if Bijan Robinson rushed for 800 yards this year, they can go to any 5-star running back in the country and say, we will play you next year right away. Look at how many carries we're giving everybody. Like, yes, they can do that. But if Bijan has an Ezekiel Elliott freshman year where he gets like 250 yards rushing and almost all of it goes in one game, then – he better turn into a first-round draft pick. Otherwise, every coach that recruits against Texas will point to those numbers and go, you don't want to go there. They're not going to treat you like a 5-star running back. I would contend that Brendan Eagles is just one of these guys who came in with a big enough profile that they're more vested in that guy paying off than a Kobe Boyce. But here's an excellent point that I think that you made that I just want to like reaffirm. Some guys if these guys are horses, some horses constantly need a carrot dangled in front of their face to make them go. The issue with Tom Herman and his previous staff, because we can't really speak about anything other than Tom with his current staff, a guy can get tired of holding the carrot stick after a while. And I wonder, I don't know about this staff, but my hunch on Tom, where I think you may be right, is Tom may not be a guy that just wants to hold the damn stick in front of the horse forever. Like he may be the kind of guy that's like, I've been holding the stick for a couple of months now, and this horse still ain't going without I'll just get a new horse. So I get it. There are just consequences for actions like that. I just think that Brendan Eagles symbolically is the type of guy they've got to start getting developed, playing at a high level, making it to the NFL. Because I'm tired of writing stories about Texas had top 5 recruiting classes and guys like Brendan Eagles were the highest rated guys in those classes and they didn't pan out and just kind of dicked around for four. And I don't think that's a curse word, by the way. I think that's a metaphor or something. I don't know. For like, this isn't Ticket City. Yeah. You can't have these guys just kind of be there for 4 years and then they go and then they make the NFL undrafted. Because the talent was always there and you weren't getting enough out of them. Feels like that happens. This isn't like a Tom Herman problem. It just feels like for the last decade, Texas has had as many guys get undrafted and make the NFL as they've had get drafted really highly and make the NFL. And I just look at, I'll be really disappointed for Texas football if Brennan Eagles comes in as a national top 50 prospect with all that talent, with all that five-star ability, and never emerges into a truly great player because he couldn't figure it out and they couldn't help him figure it out, and then they just moved on. That would just be a, that would be a disaster from my vantage point.
Number four catch. On that right side of the offensive line, in order to win a Big 12 championship, Denzel Okafor and Christian Jones, do they need to play on the all-conference level? Very important, fairly important, important slightly, not at all.
Not at all. I mean, it would be great if they did, right? If you, they're both first-team All-Americans. Okay. I think what Texas needs out of those guys is slightly above starters. I think, or slightly above average starters. That'd be really good. I mean, if those guys play at Parker Braun levels this year, Texas can win a Big 12 championship, because I think the rest of that line, if you're telling me that all five guys play above average, then I think you're, now you got an above average offensive line. So I don't know what metric you apply to that. I don't need those guys to be all – Texas has an All-American offensive lineman. And who knows, maybe Kerstetter develops into somebody like – I don't know. More than those guys being all-conference, they just need those guys to not be terrible. Or replacement level, right? It can't be – well, because here's what happened the last time Denzel Okafor was a starter. He – they found – and wasn't this when Kerstetter was coming along and, like, the conversation was like, we don't really feel like one guy gives us an advantage over the other. And I, that's where these two guys can't be in. They can't be in the category of by week four, you're asking, oh, should Hook Finn go in? And then the answer is a shrug, because Hook Finn's not any better than Jones. So they just need those guys to be good. Just don't be crappy. If they're good to a little bit better than good, and the rest of that Texas offensive line plays at the level that we expect them to, and they stay healthy, Texas can win a Big 12 championship. I'm not too bothered by what those two dudes have to do from a highest possible scale limit.
See, I'm going to put it as it as important, so I'm going to put it somewhere in the middle. Like a three. Yeah, I put it about a three. Okay. We've seen bad offensive lines, and like let's. I mean, that you know, Tom Herman's first year, that 2017 offensive line really wasn't that good. And it probably was a year in Charlie's tenure, probably multiple, where they weren't as that good. But I've seen what bad can do. And I've seen even if you try to hide some guys on the right side, I've seen games where they've just said, all right, well, we're just going to put our best pass rusher on the right side and just beat you that way. So I put that as for me important. I think it's important for Herb Hand. I think it's important from a development standpoint, and, you know, kind of almost alluded to what you said a little bit, Coach, when you talked about the importance of getting something out of Brennan Eagles and bringing in a guy, and what that means for recruiting going forward, to bring in a guy that's so highly rated, and then be able to get the most out of him and turn him into the NFL player. To a lesser degree, I'm not talking about these guys turning into NFL talent, but, you know, these guys are also, you know, on Herb Hand's watch. And Herb Hand, from a recruiting standpoint, and look, you give him credit for the development of a Sam Cosmi, right? So you can't have one without the other. You're going to have to give him credit for the development of a Junior Engelhau, you know, even though Junior came in with a lot of talent. Like, Junior came in, and as a freshman, even though he's going to be redshirted, he was practicing with the twos. So, you know, that you don't hit the ground running on day one practicing with the twos unless you have a degree of talent that already exists there, right? You understand what I'm saying? You give him credit for Derek Kerstetter, but you also have to say, all right, this is – you know, from an offensive line recruiting standpoint, I think it's fair to say it's not going well right now. And you've got to be able to show guys that, hey, you can develop multiple guys on the line in order to be able to, you know, get these top level recruits to want to come here, whether they have family ties or they're in the state of Texas. I mean, you know, again, and I'm not going to turn this into a Herb Hand recruiting thing, but I do remember, Ketch, and I look at your LSR, the amount of talent from the offensive line standpoint, and you called it one of the deepest years in many years as far as offensive line talent here at Texas. And they don't really have anything to show for it. You know, they have one guy to show for it, and that's really about it. And that, you know, props to that kid because he's elite, but you know, I think that also makes it to me very important is you've got to be able at the end of the day say, yeah, we also threw in Christian Jones, Denzel Okafor, and you know what? They were, you know, honorable mention, third team, whatever teams that were, you know, Big 12 puts together, as opposed to just okay. Because I don't know if just okay moves the needle for the next recruiting class. That's all.
You know what's weird? I think you might get a chuckle out of this.
Okay.
For all of the Herb Hand social media, barbecue pit master, all that stuff, for all the personality that he has, it feels like the guy they need him to be this year is Joe Wickline, right?
Oh, wow.
Just make the offensive line good.
Yeah.
Just at this point, forget about recruiting Herb. Make this offensive line really good and make those two guys we just talked about all conference level players. And to your point, if that were to happen, recruiting gets easier. It really does. Like, suddenly Herb Hand doesn't have to be the grill master anymore. He didn't have to be on Twitter. All he has to do is produce dudes that make it to the NFL and win major honors. And the rest of that stuff seems to take care of itself. The problem that – because I think Herb Hand's really talented. I think the problem that he's in right now is this weird purgatory. He hasn't really developed a lot of guys for the NFL while he's been at Texas. He hasn't been able to land the big prospects. And so there's this weird what came first, the chicken or the egg, and it's just taken years to figure out the answer. Like, Cosme will go pro and presumably be a first-round draft pick, and then he'll be able to plant a flag. And I think that'll be a good first step, but he needs that in volume and not just one guy. And that's where, to your point, that those two guys reaching that kind of level, I think more so than like a conference championship, would just impact the overall health of the program significantly.
Yes, totally agree with you. All right, number five. Let's go switch a little bit to defense. Joseph Osai finishes the season with at least 8 sacks.
5.
Okay. Very important.
Yes.
You didn't. This is the only one you did not hesitate on at all.
I didn't need you to finish the sentence. I would have been that person that buzzed in on Steve Harvey before the question. Potatoes! And then he reads out the rest of the question and it has nothing to do with potatoes.
Yes.
You said Joseph Osai, and there's nothing else that could have. He's the best player on this defense for me by a country mile. If he's not spectacular, this defense cannot finish as one of the top three in the Big 12. If Joseph Osai has an All-American level season, this defense gets elevated potentially quite a bit. So 5. They cannot win a Big 12 championship without Joseph Osai being first team All Big 12.
Well, I'm with you on that because I, you know, when I think of the change on the defensive line and go from the 3-4 to the 4-3, and the 4-3 seemed to be something that I get a lot of players have wanted to do for a while anyway. There's been guys who just have never really liked the 3-4 scheme and really were uncomfortable in it. And look, when you got players that you are trying to play in something that they're not convinced in and they're not sold on, you will get those kind of reactions of guys who are throwing up their heads or being pissed off and, you know, they've got to believe in it. So
they have a hard time finding guys in the NFL to play that defense.
They do.
It's really hard.
It is. I mean, there's a reason why you don't do it as much. I mean, it's a tough thing to do and accomplish. And it's very tough. You know, the problem Texas was having, Ketch, was, you know, you just had quarterbacks that were just saying, that's too much time to release. Like, you're going to rush 3 guys against 5? Okay, you can drop everybody, but if the quarterback's got 5 seconds to throw, somebody's getting open. You know what I'm saying? So,
in the Big 12, quarterbacks are in the shotgun, and they're going to get rid of the ball in like less than a second.
Correct. They're getting somebody in motion.
So you're rushing 3 against, I mean, in theory, the idea is, well, we can't get to the quarterback, right? Because they're getting rid of the ball so quickly. But what Texas has learned is, because in theory, that's why you'd go 3-4. You go 3-4 because you're not going to get to the quarterback. So it helps you put guys into space. It helps you do the – but the thing is, at any level, you have to get to the quarterback. Like, you can't concede because someone else is scheming in a way that makes it harder, that you just can't do it at all. Because Tom Herman would never say, well, we just got to give up running the ball. Or today we can't throw it. Yeah, we're just going to run it 70 times. They're not letting us throw it. You can't let a team say, you can't, well, we can't rush the passer. If you do, if that is a sentence that you believe on defense, how can you be a good defense? You can't.
No, not at all. I'm 100% with you. All right, let's get to number six here. This is going to play off for number three, which is Brandon Eagles. So this is also going to be fun for you.
Okay.
Caden Stearns needs to play at an all-conference level.
Five.
Okay. I knew where this was headed because you and I have seemingly, in a fun way, have done the Caden Stearns, Brandon Eagles argument.
You're right. You are so right.
So,
but Brennan had a better year a year ago than Caden did.
I mean, if you're gonna say no interceptions means a guy doesn't have a big year, then I can't.
He had no forced fumbles, no recovered fumbles, no interceptions. I think he had one pass breakup. He touched the ball. He touched the ball last year, Anwar, one more time than you did.
I mean, I get it. All right, so give me your breakdown of him. Give me your breakdown of him.
Light switch just has to come on. The ability's there. Like, I don't watch Caden Stearns and think to myself, he can't. I've watched Caden Stearns and think to myself, he hasn't. And, you know, he's just a weird one for me because I wrote after the first six games of his career, and I truly still believe this, that the first six games of his career were better than any true freshman defensive back in the history of the program. I firmly believe that. The next 20 games he's played in, though, he just hasn't been an impact player. And he's too good not to be in it. You know, my thing about him is, he finished the season. I just like rolled out those stats. I don't think most people even realize that. Like, he's good enough that you're not completely noticing that he's not on the field. He's just not doing enough. He's way too talented to just be touching the ball one more time in a season than I do. And I just think that he's got a lot of game reps. He's now got coaching that he has to feel more confident in. He's got a defense in front of him that should give him a better pass rush. Like, there are all of these things that are in play that should make the play of the back four in general better. But he's a guy. The NFL knows who Caden Stearns is. The NFL is preparing for Caden Stearns to be an NFL player. It's time for Caden Stearns to play like an NFL player and not just look like one. Because he's going to play on Sundays. I think he's a guy that can play for 10 years on Sundays. I would make a case that so far in his Texas career, he's played like a guy that wouldn't make the entirety of his third round first contract. So he's got to play better. But I fully believe he can. And, I mean, shoot, if you made me put $100 on it, I think I'd bet on him more getting there than not getting there. Which is why, like, that's me saying five. I don't think that should scare Texas fans. I think they should agree but feel confident that they've got a player who can get there as opposed to a guy who's overhyped but really doesn't have the ability that the hype matches. I think Stearns does, so much so that he could be a first-round draft pick. He's just got to play like it.
Yeah, I'll put mine at a four, just to tap it under you. Because I do think the talent is there. I do put probably a lot more on Asai being that dude to put a little bit more on that defensive line, being able to play way better than what we saw beforehand. And, you know, I do feel like, look, there were times when these DBs were there was just too much time. Like, they didn't play well, but there was also times where their defensive line just did not help them. And it looked,
wasn't Chris Brown the best safety on the roster last year?
Yeah, I mean, one could say that, sure. Yeah.
I mean, and I don't even say that to make a point, other than I was thinking about, so I don't even, it might have even been you, maybe somebody else. Somebody just asked me if Osai was one who would be in my top three defensive players.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
Okay, but I didn't have Stearns in my top three. And I just thought to myself, you know what? At the end of the season, you'd like to be able to think this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think he's key. You know, it's interesting talking about professionals. When I was watching the NFL draft earlier this year, and they were, and Brandon Jones was selected, the announcers always start talking, and Mel Kiper started breaking down Brandon Jones, but it was just one of these little things that I caught. And he said he played by, you know, next to a really talented Caden Stearns. And I thought, for, you know, Mel doesn't really do evaluations 2 years out. You know, I mean, he does it, after a draft is over, that's usually when he starts getting into the next year's draft and checking in with resources and kind of going from there. And I know people give Mel Kiper a lot of crap, but that's a hard ass job. And like, I can't give that guy any kind of shit that a lot of people give him. I mean, because people could say, well, he gets things wrong. And my response to that has always been, well, you know what? NFL teams who invest millions of dollars into the draft with their scouting programs, with their coaches, with the combine, with the Pro Bowl, with the individual workouts, they do all this stuff, and those guys get it wrong. So I'm not going to hold a guy who's on television to a higher standard than I will hold NFL teams to. Like, ask the Cleveland Browns how they feel about quarterbacks and what they've been able to do. So,
Anwar, you know what it is, man? Like, people don't realize that, like, evaluation is like baseball, man. You bet 300, you're going to make the Hall of Fame. This is not an end. This is, and I'm not talking about Kiper anymore. And I love Kiper. I literally hope Kiper is on the air for the next. I hope they have to pull his ass off the air right before he dies. Like, I hope Kiper's an NFL draft guru till he's 90, 95. He's iconic. So this isn't even about him. This is about actual NFL teams. NFL teams have success at drafting at about the rate that college football teams have in, like, five stars develop and hit at a higher rate than first round picks. High four stars develop and hit at a rate higher than second round picks. Like, even first and second round picks, there's a high volume of misses.
Oh my gosh.
It's mitigating. It's why when you get in the top 10 NFL, that's why they say things like, you lose your job if you miss this pick.
Yes.
Because, you know, once you get outside the top 10, it's hard to get them right. You're 50-50. It's less than a five star. So we live in a world where, you know, Ozzie Newsome back in the day when he was the GM, like, everybody could cite off all of the guys that he hit, but he still was probably batting like 330.
Sure.
But you hit 330 with power and you get to Canton.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
If you bat 300 and hit a bunch of singles, you better have a whole bunch of singles. And that's the way it is in development. That goes back to the Brennan Eagles. He and Caden Stern, and the reason why I brought that up partly is I bet the guys that Kiper does know about are the five stars. So he probably knows every major program in the country. He can tell you who their five-star prospects are. Because at some point, 70% chance they're going to need to know about those guys. So might as well start finding out about them early.
Yes, you're probably 100% right. And you are right about the misses. When I was in Tampa, a couple of ones I definitely remember. I remember Gaines Adams out of Clemson, a defensive end. You know, rest in peace of them. But he was drafted number four overall by Tampa Bay. And they thought that he was, I mean, you draft a guy number four, you're expecting Reggie White. I mean, essentially, right? That's what you're thinking is going to happen.
He's got to be an all pro.
Got to be.
Didn't have to make the Hall of Fame. But at four, man, you should make an all pro team once.
Correct. He was, and he, you know, within 3 or 4 years was traded to Chicago, and then unfortunately died about a year or so later because of a heart condition. And another one that you'll remember, Josh Freeman. And when Josh got there, he had a really good first year because he had a great year, you know, from a first-year standpoint. It was him, Mark Sanchez, and Matthew Stafford that were in that draft class as far as first-year guys and first-round guys. And Freeman had a really good year. I want to say the Bucs may have won like 10 games or so that year, if I'm correct. It was with Raheem Morris. And then, you know, hope I'm getting this right. Stafford was hurt a lot of that first year. And Sanchez was kind of, you know, okay at that point. But I believe, if I remember correctly, Freeman had better numbers than Sanchez had. And then it just went so downhill for Josh Freeman after that. And, I mean, within a few years, the guy wasn't even in the league anymore. So, to your point, you know, from evaluations, we talk about what you do. Everyone else, like, yeah, it's easy to criticize, but there are people who are get paid millions of dollars that get this wrong. Okay, number seven, catch. Special teams. Deshaun Jameson excels on punt returns. Where you put that on the scale?
I feel like this is the offensive line one. Like they can win it without it, but boy, if you tell me that they can have it, it sure makes it a lot easier. Like somewhere between 2 and 3, I can't quite decide. It would be totally badass if that happens. If it doesn't, it's unfortunate, but I do think that they'd be able to survive. They can't have the walking, talking disaster in the punt return game from a year ago. But, like, you know, they're just pretty good. That'd be fine.
I put it at 3. I put it as important. So we're probably right around the same way. But, I think back to the Oklahoma game last year. And when you look at field position, a lot of that was just because – of the errors that occurred on the punt return team. And you just looked, I mean, at one point, Ketch, this team was in the negative yards in punt return, like, which is unheard of.
I'm so mad that stat went away. That was the best. It was the most awesome. It was the most effed up stat ever, right? Yes. Like embarrassing for Texas football, but I've never seen anything like it. And I'm not lying when I tell you that I felt once it went away, I'm glad it went away in style, if I'm not mistaken. Like once the return went, it was like, oh, they're never going to go negative again. Like they got like a 20-yard return and it was like, oh man, you were negative for so long and you've messed it up.
Yes, but
they were negative for like 9 weeks.
It was horrible. And you talk about how pissed off Tom Herman was in those press conferences.
Oh.
Man, he was not freaking – he was not happy to get those calls and get those questions about how bad it was. At the end of the day, I'm looking up here, Texas finished 48th in the country. But it looks like their return average – I'll make sure I get this correct. So their return average was at 9 yards. 9.1 yards was their return average. The number one team in the country was Alabama at 24 yards.
Texas got that thing up to 9 yards?
Yeah, apparently they did get it up to 9. I'm looking up here, ranked 48th. I'm looking at CFP stats.
I believe you, kind of. Like,
you just got to see it for yourself.
I do. I'm in total disbelief, but not because I'm suggesting that you're wrong. It's just they were so back-ass backwards for so long that somebody that must have been what Draytner handed to keep their job. One of those two dudes came in and saved the punt return.
Somebody helped out on that because they had a special teams coach, right? So
special teams right now. I'm just need to see this. I can't remember how that turned around.
Jameson had like a 90 something yarder or something to that effect. He had that
71 yarder. Yep. Yep, that changed it all.
91, so
he
yeah.
actually averaged 25 yards a return.
But that's the thing. They were messing around with other guys, you know, and you know, everybody kept thinking, well, why don't you just throw in this guy and keep him there? And then eventually they're like, yeah, all right, that's the guy.
It was Byron Vaughn that had the – like he had a muff at one point, I think, or the ball hit off of him. and it went from backwards 6 yards. It totally screwed up the stats. Yeah. They were like minus nine for a while because yeah. they were just fair catching everything. And that Vaughn's muff or what deflection or whatever it was that went backwards. That was the one. Cause I'm looking at it right now and it was like Jake Smith minus 4 yards. And then it was Vaughn's minus six.
Yeah.
Then Jameson only had four last year. So that one 71, to be fair, he averaged 10 yards on the other three as well. So he should be the dude touching the ball, it sounds like.
Yeah, he should be. And, like, and, you know, Jake was a guy that you didn't want touching the ball at some point. You know, he was, you know, that was a point where they actually had to take him off after the Kansas game. Because they were just like.
Jameson average on kickoffs?
No, what was it?
30, almost 31 yards a return.
Wow. Wow.
Duvernay only averaged 20 a year ago.
Man,
they might just – I'm just throwing it out there. When a dude averages – I mean, he had 12 kickoff and punt returns combined a year ago, and he's averaging like 28 yards a return on all returns.
Wow.
You might, like, get that dude the ball.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, I think there's a reason why Bulwer has come in. It's like, yeah, that's the guy on punt and kickoff return. So,
dude's already justified his hire, as far as I'm concerned.
He definitely has, right? So, you might want to write, hey, Ketch, you got 10 thoughts. You might want to write one down. I'm just going to tell you.
Well, you and I have written, like, we have written about the Gizzards at this part of the offseason. How am I just now, like, at the same time realizing that Jameson finish the season with such high averages in both phases of the game? I feel like I've looked at UT stats frontwards and backwards so much this offseason, and that one kind of caught me off guard. I've forgotten how good DeShawn Jameson was, probably because he only averaged less than one return a game a year ago. And you know how you said in your article on Sunday how Herman, as a head coach, reserves the right to, hey, probably should get Jake Smith the ball. Like, it was Herman, actually, that was explaining it and answering your question. Jameson might be one of those dudes that, like, Herman a few times a game has to stop and go, hey, we haven't had – let's make sure Jameson's in on returns.
Yes.
Hadn't touched the ball in a week. Like, that shouldn't be a thing anybody ever says about a dude who's averaging almost 30 yards a touch.
You know,
hadn't touched it in a week. We got to find a way to get the guy who averages 30 yards every time he touches the ball.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain things. There's two things from last year that stand out to me about that, right? It was the DeShawn Jameson performance and thinking to myself, that guy should return all punts. The second one was the Kenyatta Watson performance against Texas Tech at the end of the year, where I turned around and said, well, why hasn't that guy been playing? Because I've seen more out of this guy in this game than I've seen out of most of the other defensive backs throughout most of this year. So my question was, where was he? And so, and then when I hear, when I ask around about him this year, and I hear like, oh, tremendous talent. We think the guy's great, high upside, a couple of guys in front of him, but he's going to be great. And I keep thinking, well, why is he not in? So those are the two that kind of stand out.
Jameson didn't get a punt return. I've just completely forgotten. Jameson didn't get a punt return until the Utah game. He went 4 for 102 in punt returns in the bowl game, and it completely changed their season numbers. That wow. one performance. That one performance got them into the top 50 nationally.
Wow.
Without it, they're probably closer to 100.
That's amazing.
I mean, and he came in the bowl game, 4 punt returns after not having any all season long. He had the long kickoff return. What was that, against Rice?
Yes, right? I believe you're right. Like,
they had the one for a touchdown. And then he just never got a touch. And then in the bowl game, he got 4 and was electric. And now, like you said, Bulware shows up and is like, I'm gonna get him the ball.
Yes. What's your name? Yeah.
I don't know who is 2, yes. But I can tell you who is 1.
Yes. Like, yeah. So that's where you're going to be at all times. All right.
You better learn to catch the ball good, son.
Yes.
You're going to be back there a lot.
Yes. All right. We got 3 more to knock out.
Okay.
Ready?
I'll go rapid fire. I'll talk. Right. I'll go fast.
Again, with your scale, Texas reasserts its dominance against TCU and Oklahoma State.
dominance?
Okay, you want a better word for that? And I don't mean, I don't, how about beat them consistently? Or would you just rather wins as opposed to dominant? But I look at,
I mean, I look, Texas should strive for dominance, but I would take wins.
Okay.
I would take ugly by the hair of their chinny chin chin wins in 2020. Because if it happened in both, they're playing in the Big 12 championship game.
Yes.
Now, at some point, this program's got to get back to style points. And look, maybe you could – I'll listen to an argument that says, well, if you can't kick their ass, then, you know, if you can't beat them with style points, then you're not going to win the Big 12 anyway. I get you. But all things being equal, man, you got to walk before you can run. And TCU has still been Texas's daddy more times than not. And I've used the daddy metaphor. I've used the taking the cornbread metaphor before.
You use cornbread.
Texas got to take the cornbread. Better yet, how important is it for Texas to take Oklahoma State and TCU's cornbread?
Cornbread, okay, okay.
On the cornbread scale, I'll give it a 5. On the dominant scale, I find myself thinking about that word the same way everybody else thinks about damn good. And I'm like, I'm subjectively placing it into a realm that I shouldn't. But on the cornbread scale, it's a 5.
Okay, cornbread. We're going to go, we switch it to cornbread. Cornbread's a 5.
5.
All right.
On the cornbread scale, it's a 5.
I'm with you. It just for obvious reasons, right? And look, I mean, you know, I clearly – you know that I am a Mike Gundy guy, and interesting offseason for Gundy. But overall, as a coach, you know, I'm still saying he's a hell of a coach. And I still marvel at what they're able to do at these programs like the TCU and Oklahoma State as far as developing guys who are not five stars. I mean, I think what TCU just got their catch, their first five star in the program's history.
Yeah.
With the running back. So this is a program that hasn't had that, but Gary Patterson finds a way to sweat his ass off on the sidelines and coach his team to win. And Mike Gundy, I mean, Oklahoma State won 7 out of 10 games in the past decade against this team. So, you know, at the end of the day, those are teams that I think for Texas to get to where they want to be, you know, those are just games you got to win. Like those can't be your life or death games. Those can't be the oh my gosh, trepidation games. Those are going to be the games, Keshton. You just go in and you're like, all right, this is what, you know, you're going to win this game, you know, maybe close, but you expect that you have more talent than the guys on the other side, but you don't want to go into that and say, we might lose this game because we're getting outcoached on the other side.
Here's what Texas needs. Texas needs to beat they need to slap the taste out of TCU's mouth to such a degree that everybody forgets about the past 5-6 years.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. Oklahoma from 2000 to 2004 basically beat Texas 5 times in a row. They outscored Texas basically the equivalent of that TCU stat. A couple times they dropped 60-point bombs on Texas. In 2005, Texas slapped the taste out of Oklahoma by 30-plus points, and they just stopped talking about that streak. And, like, I think that's what has to happen. Like, at some point, they got to deal with the TCU thing in a very emphatic way. And more so than Oklahoma State. Like, TCU is symbolic in its own way, in the way that I built up Brennan Eagles to be symbolic. They need to get TCU – they need to put TCU back into the cockroach box. And, you know, it's been a long time since Daryl Royal called TCU a bunch of cockroaches, and it's stuck. Like, right now, can't say they're cockroaches because they keep on winning too many games against you. So they need to end that.
Okay, number 9, speaking of, it is more of a simplistic one. Texas needs to beat OU during the regular season.
3.
Okay.
I mean, you know, they did this before. It's you know what? Texas must play extremely well in the Big 12 championship game if it plays Oklahoma a second time. 5.
Okay.
You know?
Sure, but like, sure.
The way I look at the OU game now is less about that game the way we used to think about it and more along the lines of what does that do for your positioning for the game? So its importance matters less than if you win it, you've positioned yourself for a little bit of wiggle room, right? Losing that game means that when you play those other teams that we just talked about, you have less wiggle room to get to the game that ultimately matters. Because if Texas goes 10-0 and they beat Oklahoma by 50 and Dallas in October, but then they lose to Oklahoma in December by 1, 10-0 won't matter at all. It would be an incredibly harsh set of circumstances to find yourself in, but it would be the reality. I don't know how to say Oklahoma doesn't matter as much in October, but it doesn't anymore. It's a means to an end, because the important thing is getting to Dallas. It's more important to get to Dallas than it is to beat Oklahoma, weirdly.
See, this is interesting for me, Ketch. It's what you're saying makes so much sense. And I'm actually not going to disagree with what you're saying, but I want to add on, and why I'm going to make this a 5 for the regular season. Look,
symbolic.
Yes. You've to me, you got Spencer Rattler as a freshman quarterback. You're talking about that will be his, what, third game of the year at that point. They have a warm up, maybe third or fourth game, actually. I think they played 2 games before Texas. So they play their non-conference game. They play Kansas State at home. They travel to Iowa State, and then they play Texas. So that would be week 4 for them. You expect them to do week 1. Kansas State is always a tough out at Iowa State with Brock Purdy. Should be a very interesting game. And then you have Texas. It's of utmost importance. If OU comes out and beats you in week 4, with a freshman quarterback, redshirt freshman, but still a freshman quarterback. I don't know from a confidence level standpoint, a belief standpoint, where this team goes and where this team heads, from there. I think it's of utmost importance for this team to get out to a good start with new head coaches, new belief systems, all these type of things. And I think, Ketch, they've got to go out and they've got to beat OU. You can try for the rally on the back end and beat these teams. But Ketch, ever since I've been here, Texas has always played from behind.
Yeah.
It's always, I've done the stuff from the non-conference stats, and there's always the high expectations of, okay, what does it take? Texas is ranked 15th in the country, right? And so it always starts off at, top 20, something to that effect. And then he starts talking about national titles and what that can look like, right? And then inevitably they lose a game that's within the non-conference schedule. And one year they lost two of those games. And then they kick the can down the road and start talking about conference games. And then, they lose a conference game here or there. And then it's like, well, we still got a chance to make it to the Big 12 title game. And if they don't make it to the Big 12 title, well, we still have one of our goals on the table, which was to make it to a bowl game, right? And it's like, and then it's like, let's find a way to send the seniors out with a win. Like, if I had at least $100 for every time I've heard, let's send the seniors out for a win. Well, 2 years without Charlie, so I'd miss that money. But I've had some other, at least $600, I believe, or $500, whatever my tenure is. You know what I'm saying, Ketch? It's like, it's always moving the needle. It's always playing from behind. It's always rationalizing. And I just think, man, get out there and start to – like, to me, it's paramount to, if you want to break this cycle, that you've got to go out there and beat OU. That's just my opinion on it.
2 quick baby follow-up questions. One's smart ass and the other one's legit. Which one do you want first?
Smart ass.
What do you think Kyler Murray would answer the question as?
As far as which aspect of it, beating Texas?
No, the same question. Like, how important is beating Texas in October? You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, very true.
If you ask him the same question.
I think he would say not as important, but I think he would say it's important. I think he'd say it's a
3, right? So here's my question.
I think he might say a little higher than that, but go ahead.
What would Sam say? And not like a microphone in front of him. We're asking him the question when he knows the lights are on, but like, I wonder what Sam thinks about that game, knowing one of his greatest moments as a player kind of got rendered moot, right?
Yes.
Like I don't mean to be callous when I say that, but Kyler Murray ultimately got the spoils of that matchup, and they'll never be able to take that moment away from Sam, but its importance ended up being muted significantly. So I don't know.
No, it's incredible because it is Sam's greatest moment, but then there was the Big 12 championship game, right? So, you know, you got, again, what I say is always moving the needle and moving the success markers back, because you're like, all right, well, then they went on, they played against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, and Sam had his moment there, and that was good. But then there was the we're back thing, and then he had to try to live with that, and then Texas finished. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah. You know, it's I'm with you. And at the end of the day,
I bet if Texas beats Oklahoma in October, Sam comes out of that game saying this doesn't mean much. It's about it. And I'm not saying that necessarily changes the way we would answer this question. I think there's a couple of different ways that he would answer it. I think from experience, if Texas wins in October, his message as a leader will be, we put this behind us. It means nothing, because in the big scheme of things, it won't mean anything if they have to play a second time. All that will matter then is the next 60 minutes and not the first 60 minutes.
I mean, at the end of the day, he's what, 1-3 versus Oklahoma? Is that correct?
It feels like an unfair stat, but yes.
Right. And it was because he had two losses in one season, the loss last year and the loss as a freshman.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you don't want to finish your career with more. Chris Sims finished his career 0-3 as a starter. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, he's beaten Oklahoma, but he also puts himself potentially in a position to finish as the losingest quarterback of all time against Oklahoma. Nobody's ever lost four.
Yeah. Boy, well, there's another stat you just pulled out.
I mean, because technically Sims was a freshman in 1999, so even though he didn't play, I had to go back and look. Maybe he even played in that 99 game. Texas beat Oklahoma. Like, and so Ellinger would have – he'd be the first Texas quarterback to – he may already be the first Texas quarterback to start and lose to Oklahoma. No, Sims did that. I got to go back and look it up.
Well, I'm almost at the 99 year right now. I'm looking up 99 teams.
Sims stat. Lost in 2001 and 2002. I just don't.
Applewhite was in 99.
I think Applewhite started the 2000 game as well.
Okay, so Applewhite's in 99. Hold on, let me go to 2000. You got to tell me more, because Applewhite had 2,100 yards.
It was such a beatdown. I blocked that game from 20 years ago out. It should have the starting lineups in that game.
Hold on, one second. Hold on. This was a.
It's a great podcast.
63-14.
Yeah, that's the one. Ooh. Like I said, that one, the details are sketchy after all.
Wow.
I know the 2003 60-plus point beatdown more than I know the 2000 one.
Well, that one isn't on LHN. It looks like Sims had – I don't know, dude. Sims had 11 for 23, but Major had 9 for 18. There's somebody right now screaming because they know the answer.
Oh, like, everybody does. The thing is, the 2000 season was so convoluted because you've heard about the Major Chris thing for so long.
Yes.
This is what it was. Like, they couldn't make up their mind. It was back and forth and back and forth. I want to I can't remember who started that game. It was so bad. All I remember is that – oh, here it is. Applewhite started that game. Mm. I'm looking at the starting lineup right now. That was a bad team.
Well,
for Texas fans listening, that was a Texas team that had Mike Williams, Leonard Davis, Derek Dockery. That's two top five picks, and another, I think Dockery was like a second round pick, third round pick. Matt Anderson and Kirk Hughes. So that offensive line was awesome. But it had Brandon Healy starting at wide receiver. This was back when Mac had Roy Williams sitting on the bench.
Wow.
And we talked about Cedric. Remember the whole thing about Mac would always start freshman the year after the Oklahoma game?
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken, He doesn't start Roy Williams in 2000. I know that. I'm looking at it. And he starts up Roy Williams for the rest of his career after this game. And if I'm not mistaken, I'll go and look right now. They played at Colorado the next week. I'm pretty sure Sims got the start. And then Applewhite got the start that day. Never mind. I was wrong. I digress. But Roy Williams did start games after Oklahoma. All it took was a 60-something point beatdown for Roy Williams to be the starter the next week.
It's amazing.
All right, Chris, one more question.
One more question. Chris Sims becomes, what was he, a third-round pick by Tampa, I believe, that after his senior year? He's either second or third, something to that effect. Covered him in Tampa. That got to know him really well. I know Texas fans have a little issues with him now, but in Tampa, it was good. I can't believe the guy covered a game where he almost died with his spleen. And he actually was bleeding internally throughout the game. And then he goes, the craziest part, and this is how fucked up
Gruden
the NFL
was
is.
Such a dirtball about
dude,
this.
Dude, you know what they told him? They thought that maybe he was just dehydrated, and they told him to get some Gatorade and go back
so
in the
bad.
Game.
Like they almost killed him.
They literally almost killed the guy. And then I've heard when he got to the hospital and they had to rush him there, his spleen was there. They said the OR was just a bloody mess. From everything that was going on internally, like it was like dude nearly died in a game, and they thought he needed some water, and so they told him to get some Gatorade.
I wish you could go back in the DeLorean time machine to 2001 and experience the Big 12 championship game the night that he melted down against Colorado. I wish someone who's in this market now and only gets to hear about the legend of the major Chris thing. I wish they could experience it on the night when Texas fans lost their minds and got a hold of Chris Sims's number on the internet and like left voice. Like it got bad. I can't like Orange Bloods at that point in time on where we had less than 1,000 subscribers. So we weren't really bothering anybody back then. Yeah. I'm trying to imagine orangebloods.com with the volume of traffic that we have now and Chris Sims. I'm just telling you, go back into YouTube and like look at highlights of that game. It was bad. Texas beat that team 42-10 earlier in the season. They played like 5 weeks later and just Sims couldn't get out of its own way. And to such an extent that Cedric Benson and Mike Williams had a head-on collision trying to chase down someone on a Chris Sims interception, and it knocked them both out of the game. It was one of them nights, man. It was one of them nights when the hottest player on your team, Cedric Benson, gets knocked out of the game because he was trying to make a tackle on an interception return that your quarterback threw like the third one of the game. It was not good.
Okay, what game is this? You said 99 or 2000?
2001 Big 12 championship game.
2001 Big 12 championship. Okay, that
was the first Texas game that I, if I'm not mistaken, where the game was played inside a stadium where alcohol was sold.
Oh, wow.
Because it was at Texas Stadium.
Wow. Okay, yeah, I will – that game is not on LHN in their rotation. So the great part about watching LHN is that you know the result. You know they're going to win. You know, you just don't know what the score is going to be, but you know it's the great part about that. They're always going to win. So anyway, props to the History Channel. Okay, last one. Chris Ash, and maybe you'll have to define this, but Chris Ash emerges into one of the best defensive coordinators in the country.
Oh, wow. By the way, my daughter just walked in, and she has a Star Wars kite.
Oh, nice.
Very cool, Haven.
That's very nice.
It's for me? Wow, I've been presented with a Sky Delta 52 Star Wars kite. Thank you, honey. I'll be sweet. Out in just a little bit. I'm blowing you kisses, too.
Isn't being a parent great? Like that moment right there, when you're going through like that moment there is why parents cry at graduation. Like when they start replaying things in their head, and they start you're thinking about when Haley's about to walk across that stage at like Cedar Park High School. And you're sitting there in the audience, and you're that's this moment here. Is going to be why you cry.
By the way, I just slacked you.
I just saw it. It just popped up.
It's like a 30-minute video, so you could totally get the condensed.
Oh, yeah.
The version you need is in the link that I sent you.
Okay, gotcha. I'm on it today.
There will be some Texas fans who literally are going to get pissed that you and I are talking about. It's one of these things. I'm only somewhat giddy talking about it because it's been 20 years, and now we can kind of talk about it. It has been the event we don't talk about. It's very much the Voldemort of Texas athletics. Ooh. We don't talk about 2001 Big 12 championship game. We just don't.
I won't make the mistake.
Let me just describe it for you. And then I know we have to wrap up, but I've had fun doing this podcast, and I don't care that the first sponsored podcast of Your Drunk Uncle went on because we acted like two drunk uncles.
Yes.
Let me set this. So the game is getting ready to start. And Florida, Tennessee, whoever the hell it was. I mean, it's been so long. Somebody in the SEC championship game lost. So it put Texas in a position where if they beat Colorado in the game that I just linked you, Mack Brown wins his first Big 12 championship, and he plays for the national championship against Miami. So only moments before the game did Texas and its fans, because they were in a pro stadium, there were TVs everywhere. So leading up to the game, like, everybody's watching the SEC championship game and cheering. And, like, we're going to play in the national championship game. Like, the buzz inside the stadium was palpable, right?
Uh-huh.
And Texas beats this team by 35 points earlier in the year, or 32 or whatever it was. And then it started, man. Pick six. Bam. Touchdown. Sims just started throwing the ball, and he couldn't stop throwing the ball to the Colorado linebackers. And it got problematic. And then, yeah, and then because Texas fans were drinking inside the stadium at levels that – I mean, they were serving them in the fourth quarter.
Oh, like, wow.
Sims was getting booed in a college game. He was getting booed out of a stadium. It was the wildest college game I have ever witnessed, because Texas almost comes back and wins the game. And if not for a roughing the punter penalty, they probably do that. And they play in a national championship game, and Mack Brown doesn't have to wait another 4 years to win a Big 12 championship. They probably get Adrian Peterson. Like, the way history changes if that game goes the way Texas fans believe it should have gone, changes the course of history forever. Sorry, rant over.
No, it's good. It explains a lot with this, because this thing predates me, the love hate between Texas fans and Chris Sims. And Chris is clearly, you know, obviously, when by the time he left Texas, I mean, he was clearly middle fingers up in the air. And he's doesn't have any problems, you know, occasionally, you know, shitting on Texas. And
he's never been back.
Yeah, which is crazy. Never, so it says a lot.
Never. He's boys with Rod Babers. Like, they're boys. Shanahan and him are boys. Shanahan lived in Texas and came back to Austin all the time up until, like, I don't know, like 10 years ago. Like, he comes from means. Like, he doesn't want to come back. Like, bottom line, he was treated so poorly. That by the end, the way that John Gruden treated him didn't feel so bad.
No. Clearly.
Like, I bet he'd sit down and have a meal with Gruden before he would go to Austin.
Probably.
Do we have any more? Oh, you had Ash. I'm sorry, Ash.
Yes, Ash. So Ash, one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. You know, we start thinking about winning a Big 12. Very important, fairly important, important.
I mean, five.
Yeah.
Because I think to win a Big 12 championship, they've got to be a national top 50 defense at a minimum. They got to be good. I'm not saying they got to be great. I'm not even saying they got to be very good. They got to be good, though. Oklahoma's been winning the league for freaking forever, it seems. And they're never great on defense. So if Ash could get this group from the hundreds in a lot of key categories to 50, across the board in every category, that they were just a good defense, Yeah, man, I'll play for the Big 12 championship. I believe that.
With you on that as a five, just to same things that you're echoing. I don't think he has to be Ohio State good, you know, when as amazing as those defenses were and those teams were. But you can't be as bad as this team was last year. Like, there just has to be dramatic improvement. Like you said, they don't have to be number one. They don't have to be top 15 in the country. Like, none of those things that you would say you'll take, but to, like you said, like upper echelon, where you just know you've got a defense that can hold folks, and you know you got a defense that can get you those three and outs and get you off the field and get pressure to the quarterback, especially in a year catch when we look at the quarterbacks in the Big 12. And I mean, you look at a couple of guys catching, you say, okay, you know, Brock Purdy is going to be pretty good. We expect Spencer Rattler to be pretty good. I mean, look, if at the end of the day, if they didn't go out, if Oklahoma didn't go out and get themselves a grad transfer quarterback, they've got to feel good about Spencer Rattler, right? They've got to feel like he's good enough. But, Ketch, this is the year you look up, and then, you know, always look at the season. You don't see a bunch of killers on the schedule that you look at and say, man. It goes back to one of my first questions about Sam Ehlinger being the best quarterback on the field in every game, because you look at it, and on paper – Sam should be the best in every game, just on paper. And like, how things may change as the season goes along, but you realize that, you know, you're going to have the top quarterback, which means that you should have a defense that has a chance. Like, you're not facing anybody this year that you're expecting to be a first round pick. You're not facing anybody that you expect to be a number one overall pick or compete for a Heisman per se. I say that Spencer Rattler throws for 5,000 yards. But, you know, that's not what you're thinking, though, Ketch. You're thinking, like, you got a lot of touchable guys. You've got guys that are touchable. You've got guys that you're like, yeah. You know, you don't need your quote-unquote A game. If you just come strong, you should be able to beat them. And maybe Brock Purdy gets drafted and he's got that potential. But you don't look at a lot of other guys. So that's why I would say if he can make this defense into very good, not elite, but very good, then yeah, I think this team's got a realistic shot of winning the Big 12 title. That's kind of it for me.
Amen.
All right, Ketch, I appreciate you, Jordan. Appreciate you chiming in.
Didn't we?
We did, man. Sometimes the best ones are the ones that you didn't really know what was going to happen, but you know. Dude, we're 2.5 weeks away from football, man. We got to talk about it. And these are
deep topics that we have to talk about. I'm glad to have done this marathon. It was good. It was good. It was just, I'm looking at the clock and I'm like, man, my kids went to math at like 1 o'clock and school is over now.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's why they bring you kites.
So log off. I'll get this thing produced so that it's out by drive time. Like, I'll get turned around in the next hour, but I got to go downstairs and check on the fam.
Handle your kids, Ketch. Go ahead and get out. I'm going to go ahead and do my sign off. So thank you so much for joining, dude. So anyway, that was Ketch, and that was a marathon podcast, but you know what? It was a damn good one. So again, shout outs to our new sponsor. Appreciate Adam Lowy. Make sure you hit him up for all your personal injury needs. That's the man on the scene, man in Austin. I appreciate all you guys listening. I always say that you guys have tons of choices and tons of things that you could be listening to. So the fact that you're choosing to listen to my podcast, which the numbers have been fantastic through the roof. I mean, it's been going great. So definitely appreciate all the love that you guys are showing. I will be here again next week. You know, when the season gets started, probably start cranking out a couple a week. But for right now, until we get there, we'll keep it at this pace. You guys have a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic rest of your week. Be safe. And always remember what I say. Live each day like it was your last, because one day it will be, and we shall talk soon.